You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
This is Ken Vellante with the Something Rather Than Nothing podcast, and I have director David Bellino here, who is a documentary filmmaker, and recently put out the Guest List documentary, which is on Reels station. We'll get into how to access this important documentary. And some of the personal aspects of the of this tragedy of the station fire in Rhode Island, an event in 2003. Before we get into that, David, thank you so much for coming on to the show and welcome onto the program.
Oh, well, thank you, Ken, for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and thank you for spending the time. We're going to get into some questions of, you know, of art and, you know, making documentaries. But I know in just speaking with you briefly, the scope of the story, the Guest List, which debuted just a couple months ago on the Reels network. Can you tell us, David, just as far as how you ended up getting involved in this project and what the station fire was, for you as you try to tell this story, a very big story, as you mentioned. So take us into the Guest List and station fire.
So briefly, Most of it has to do with my career path and my life path, which took me from Rhode Island initially, growing up, going to school in my 20s, out to Los Angeles. And when I hit LA in the Sunset Strip, it was hard rock, heavy metal, hairbin world for real. It's everything you see today of what the late 80s was really like. I was able to live it. And my career started as a music video director in that world in Los Angeles. So working with the bands, the hair bands, all that craziness that went on, it was a great time in life. I mean, it was just the party, and it was also just a lot of fun, a lot of happiness, and, you know, very different than today in some ways, but without being negative. But so that career path, as I started in, as a Rhode Island native, it's a very small community here in Rhode Island. I was put in Los Angeles into this jungle for many, many years, 20 years, and in that industry. And it all came around full circle when I I had two young girls that we just had, my wife and I, a three-year-old, a one-year-old, and we decided to move back to Rhode Island just from a family and community and, you know, just going back to the small town to raise the family and so forth. Just so happened that it was right before the fire. So when my wife and I moved back, we're staying in my parents' house while our house was being built. They were in Florida, so we were doing the best we could with a one-year-old and a three-year-old and sleeping in our parents' bedroom again. I'll never forget waking up the morning of the fire and seeing the news. It happened at 11 o'clock or so the night before. But of course, if a lot of people were sleeping or not watching the news, that's what you woke up to. Ironically, the station nightclub was about 15 minutes from my house or my parents' house where we were staying. I didn't know about the show. It was not well promoted at all. But the world had changed at that point in time on the morning of February 21st. And to this day, it's still America's deadliest rock concert. And just briefly, the band Great White, who was a relatively popular band at the time back in the 80s, going around full circle there back in Hollywood, they, as most of the rock and heavy metal bands, were on quite a roller coaster ride over the next 15, 20 years of their career. They were considered jokes, and people were laughing at the fact that, you know, these hair bands. And so it basically drove them to play these really small crappy, you know, basically the type of nightclub that the station was, and that's all they could. They could only fill 100 to 400 people, and that's really the only places they could play. So it was kind of ironic that morning there was something inside of me that was like, you know what, someday I have to be the one to tell the story. I don't know why, like whether it's because I came from the rock world and I'm from Rhode Island. And years later, just ironically enough, no one had, you know, taken the story to this level. You know, there's been little things here and there, a lot of press, of course, a lot of national press happened at the time, but no one ever took the commitment to produce any type of narrative or documentary. There was an excellent book that was written by John Baralek, who ended up being the producer, co-producer with me, called Killer Show. And that was the most extensive work that was ever done on the fire in terms of what happened and who was responsible and the human stories and so forth. So without getting ahead of myself, basically there was something inside me. I don't know what it was, but I just had to be the one to tell the story because I understood the rock world. I understood these bands, and I was from Rhode Island on a personal level. And I understood how small knit the community was, and I knew how devastating, you know, this was. And by just moving back here, it was pretty crazy. But as you know, the fire happened in 2003, and I didn't start producing the documentary until 2015. So you're saying, well, you know, 12 years. Well, no one had done anything. And the story just kind of, I don't want to say disappeared. But I was, you know, fortunately, I guess, the one that was able to bring it back to life, which is a whole other philosophical discussion, I guess, you get into in terms of why and, you know, all the things that go with it. But that's generally what happened in terms of why did David Bellino happen to be the one to, you know, bring this to the screen.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank you, David, for that, you know, kind of that personal connection to it. And I appreciate, you know, your comments. During the show, I cover a lot of metal. I'm a really big doom metal fan, and I'm of the age of knowing a lot of the, you know, hair metal bands and those bands in '80s. And I think something you said there, which was really, you know, really true about how, you know, the popular reaction to certain styles of music and, you know, I think in talking about the safety of clubs, I know in reading the Killer Show book and of course, seeing your documentary, just thinking about, you know, the various places as a music fan where, you know, whether it's, you know, you're caught up in things or you just don't look, you know, it's a rock show. It's supposed to be a crappy place or something in your head. I just never really thought, you know, prior to the station fire about, you know, safety and exits. And, of course that's paramount, you know, in the story of, the devastating fire, preventable fire, at the Great White Concert, the station fire. So David, one of the things, and I hope everybody's listening gets we'll get into accessing the guest list, a short series, documentary. One of the things that I really appreciated about the work you did on that was, the different vantage points or approaches to this really huge story, right? Because it's a true crime story. It's a story of survival. It's a story of justice, and it's a study of kind of deep, strange occurrences. And I think from the different ways you approached it, you were able to cover a lot of different ways of looking at this story. With regards to making a film of this sort, where it is a tragedy, but the stories are so powerful. The people, you know, I'm from Rhode Island, Pawtucket, Rhode Island, originally. I can hear the Rhode Island voices. I can hear the kind of like unique aspect in reaction to when there's been wrongdoing or corruption. There's a lot of emotional content in this, David. How did you move through this with your goal of really trying to tell the story the best way and in the right way? What was that effort like for you?
Yeah, you know, it gets into the whole process of being a documentary filmmaker in the first place, and why you want to take on a story. And probably the most magical thing is that I'm not sure, I don't want to say most documentary filmmakers don't know exactly what they're making at the beginning, but it is true. And it's a process of evolution and creation. You know, you're shaping something. You obviously know the subject matter, you know the issues you want to attack and some of the themes possibly. And, you know, I knew what I was doing in terms of, you know, moving forward with the Station Nightclub documentary. But it was months and months and years of, you know, the guest list. Where did the guest list come from? Well, the guest list came from the concept of something I read and I picked up about Jack Russell's guest list. And I'm thinking to myself, my God, I mean, you know, taking a story and revolving it around the people who were actually, who put on the guest list that you know, those 2 days prior to the show. It's just fascinating to me. It's something that people, you know, would obviously do anything for, especially rock fans and so forth. Oh my gosh, the Great White guest list and having it be essentially a death list, you know. And so just these things that kept popping up, it formed itself in a sense where I started making decisions, and it started out as one thing and turned into another. You know, it took me many years just to develop the relationships with the people. And we hit on, you know, some really good topics, and one was the power of the stories. And in a sense, it's the performance that you would typically use that terminology with an actor or an actress that they presented an incredible performance, you know, in a scripted film. Well, in documentary, it's not performance, it's real. But I'll tell you, these people were so devastated, and it's still a very, very sensitive topic that in order to get the so-called quote-unquote performance that we got out of those subjects, they're not actors, they're not actresses, they're real people. But in order to see the emotion that you saw in their faces, you're not going to stick a camera in front of their face after meeting them, you know, for 10 minutes like you do in the news. I mean, you have to develop a relationship so they trust you. You know, they trust their feelings with you and emotions. And so it took many years just to develop that. And so people don't understand, well, 5 years making this thing. It wasn't that the camera was rolling for 5 years. This is what it takes to get down to the root of what you saw, you know, and how people can feel comfortable telling the story. So all these ingredients, you know, just the guest list and things and music and how important rock music was to these people and all this stuff. This is not in your head initially, right? So in other words, okay, I have this idea. This is stuff that happens over the course of the process of documentary filmmaking, which goes back to your whole theme here is art. You know, that is the art. I mean, that's what it's about. It's so fascinating being a documentary filmmaker to have a core, you know, topic and to have an idea of what you want to do and watch this piece of art develop in front of your eyes with your in your brain and your hands are forming this. And it's the editorial choices and the cinematography choices and the sound design choices, all these things that go in this ingredients that at the end of the day, when you watch it, you know, were you touched? Were you moved? Did you cry? Did you laugh? Did you, you know, all of these things that you want to affect people as a filmmaker, that is the art form, is making those choices, you know, of doing those things to tell the story.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's some powerful, there's some really powerful moments in in the stories of folks who didn't go and did go. And I think your instincts on, you know, the idea of the guest list from Jack Russell, where you'd have this real deep chance, right? You know, somebody could have been there. Somebody was too tired. They ended up being there. They were there later. And
it's fate. It's, you know, you believe in the concept of fate, and you know, you can hear that. And yeah, exactly. It's by chance and happening to be in the tattoo parlor that specific night for whatever reason. I mean, you couldn't write this stuff, you know.
Well,
yeah, so I
agree on the some of the within the story, and so folks know a little bit more specifically without with the station fire, what the actual physical location was a run down and rather unsafe and kind of an uninspected location, and there had been some soundproofing done with a flammable type of foam in order to mitigate some of the noise in the neighborhood from the station. This flammable material went up extremely quickly, and there was one primary exit. The speed of the fire and David Bellino's The Guest List covers this about 90 seconds from early in the show when some pyrotechnics catch the wall ablaze, about 90 seconds to get out in a panic scene with dark smoke and kind of caustic air, a real chaotic, scary, hell-like a landscape, and it happened so very quickly. And the randomness and some of the things we were talking about, Dave, just as far as, you know, chance, whether you were there, where you located when things happened, just played out to just incredible and at time tragic consequences, with the loss of life of 100 people in this incredible fire. David, I learned that a little bit earlier, and I didn't quite realize this at the time, there had been a Chicago, a stampede in Chicago at a show just a few days earlier in 2003. And another incredible piece of the story was that the fire marshal had commented on that story in Chicago and made comments, you know, doubting such a thing would occur in Rhode Island, which happened a few days later in the jurisdiction. And I find some of the pieces in the story that you tell about the guest list, about I don't know if it's the deep ironies, the deep tragedy in at times feeling like randomness. Did you end up being surprised about this story? Did there seem to be more of those elements where you're like, this is just too strange, too dark to be real?
Yes. And I think when I read John's book, I mean, there's a lot of things that had to come together for this to be made. I mean, this project was almost canceled probably, I'd say, at least 3 or 4 times for various reasons. And the more, you know, when I read John's book and I talked to John originally, I told him my ideas. A lot of what I read in the book, you know, just the concept of tattoos, for instance, and knowing there's two, a beautiful young couple were both killed the night of the fire together. They were just married a year prior. And it had to do with them showing up in a tattoo parlor the same night of the show. Jack Russell was in the tattoo parlor, happened to put him on his guest list. Well, later, as I began to read John's book, realizing that the only way some of these people could be identified was by the tattoos, how badly burned they were, but yet, you know, the dermis and the element of how tattoos are, you know, in the skin, they are used to identify people. And just sure. the whole irony of that, you know, the whole tattoos being such a rock and roll thing, and tattoos being able to tell the story, and then one of the characters in our film at the end creates a tattoo photo gallery to tell the stories of these victims. So just the, you know, just that alone, the concept of tattoos and how important that was.
Yeah.
It's dark. Talk about dark, you know, being able to, the only way that you're identified is the same thing, that, you know, so all these things you're talking about just fascinated me, whether it was the love of music and the, and like you said, going back to your comment about the Stampede, well, one of the owners of the club, one of the brothers, you know, that night thought it was a great idea to do a story about nightclub safety based on, you know, what had happened also in Chicago. And he brought a cameraman, one of his cameramen, who used to be a news reporter as well, into the club that night, the night of the show, just coincidentally, to get B-roll to do a story on nightclub safety, going back to the comment about, oh, this could never happen here. So that's why the fire was captured inside the way it was. You got to remember, this was before, you know, cell phone cameras and before Twitter and YouTube. This is just before that, just before the break of that in the early 2000s, which is fascinating because we don't see those kind of stories captured that way. It was just from the single news camera. And that, ironically, the reason why that news reporter, news cameraman was there was because the club owner invited him there to do a story on nightclub safety. So all of these things you're talking about, these chances and fate and darkness, and I just thought that was fascinating. So as a filmmaker, again, going back to the topic of art, I personally just tend to be, I don't want to say on the darker side, but it fascinates me. And if I can draw, you know, a line from that darkness into something that means something to somebody, you know, because the things we're talking about, even though they're hard to deal with, I mean, Lita Ford, you know, some of the people, you know, who I interviewed asked me, why are you doing this? Like, how could you do a documentary on this? I mean, it's almost like it was taboo. Like, you can never touch this topic, but it's so dark. But personally, going back from an artist standpoint, I think that's what fascinates people. And if you can bring some kind of light, you know, from that, or draw some type of conclusion for people or help people along the lines, that's kind of my motivation. Was I'm fascinated by these topics, but I also wanted to do some good.
Yeah, and absolutely, and I wanted to ask about that, David, in hearing about, you know, creating this art, and I understand or think about the dynamics that you mentioned. I think part of the thing in discussing art in creating, you know, documentary film, and with a purpose towards, you know, telling these stories, you know, potentially healing. I mean, I think the role of art within the documentary itself, when you saw the photographic exhibit and display and with the survivors, I saw a lot of creative pieces where people are trying to make sense of, you know, of what happened. This is a question I have in particular for you about the station fire itself and what had happened in Chicago. Did you discover, as a result of, you know, the investigative part of telling this story and digging deeper, did you believe or see that the conditions that created this tragedy, Did you think there's been progress made on this, you know, say nightclub safety? Did you see progress made this on this made in Rhode Island or on a bigger scale nationwide?
Well, you know, I think like anything, when something happens of that magnitude, unfortunately, politics kicks in, right? So the state of Rhode Island, okay, you know, we have to do something. And I'm not saying that people wouldn't want to or shouldn't have changed things, whether it's fire codes, sprinklers. So yeah, things changed to some extent. But one of our characters in the film, one of my subjects, is Jay McLaughlin. And Jay was a battalion chief fireman in Rhode Island for many, many years. Ironically, as a first responder, he also lost two people. And those are that young couple I was telling you about earlier in the story here. He has a lot of bitterness. And I think one of the things that you'll see if you do watch the film is the anger that still resides inside of these people. And, just the frustration, the anger, the injustice. And, you know, you hit on those when you were introducing me in terms of the themes and so forth running through this movie. One of the things I got into with Jay and as well as Jim Gahan. Jim is another character in the film who lost his only son. Very different attitudes, very different personalities. But they both, one of the most important things to them was, you know, is this going to change? Is this ever going to happen again? You know, if anything, will some good come from this so that other parents and so forth can never go through this again? And I think you see that things do change for a while, and then they begin to revert back. I don't know the details on it. I'm not, you know, in that world necessarily, but I can tell you from people like Jay, when you do watch this film, you believe Jay. He's a very believable, authentic person. And being in the business of firefighting for 30 years, I believe him. I believe John Baralek from an attorney's perspective. So I think things change to some extent, but they begin to sort of revert back again. It's like any other type of tragedy that happens around the world. All the attention is paid and people need to do something, right? They need to justify, you know, making changes, you know, in the political world that they live in. But how long that stays, you know, 10 years later, you know, who knows? So again, I can't really get specific about what specific laws changed and then reverted back, but that's the general vibe that I get. And these are from very reliable, believable people.
Yeah. And I appreciated that the pieces with, McLaughlin, and it, I was watching it and, my girlfriend said, I think you might have grown up with that guy. There was just something that was Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. There was something about, like, just the response, just the raw, yes, honest, yes, response to being screwed over that, right, you know, and there's a Rhode Island thing in there that I picked up of just this cynicism of where's, right, the justice? What about us? And it was really powerful. Yes. And it was something that I was able to be like, yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, I was yelling at the judge during, yeah, the documentary. It's it really captured that that real gut reaction. And it's a really moving piece, I think, in particular for me. You know, being a Rhode Islander, I think it can impact, but the story is just incredible. So, David, about the conceptual question, and I know we've gotten into it a bit as far as, you know, what art is. Documentary, I adore documentary film, and as I've started to try to make small documentary films and just learning, I've just become amazed at all the difficult choices and all the things that go into it. But as far as the art form of documentary of filmmaking or art in general, as a creator, David, what is art? And if you're creating something, what are you trying to do in creating that art?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's expressing. I mean, the best way I guess I could put it is that we have something to say as artists, right? So whatever that may be. In my case, as a filmmaker in general, and if you're talking about documentaries specifically, in this case, you have something to say. You know, I mean, you really have a story to tell. the art comes in, I think, in the choices as to how you, you know, paint the picture for someone. So I have something to say, but if I express it a certain way, people are going to be moved and pay attention to it, as opposed to this way, like a painting, like anything else. So, you know, you can take any example from the movie, from the film, and draw an analogy to that. I think in the case of using Jay McLaughlin as an example is a perfect example or choice, because as an artist, it doesn't seem like art, but making that choice to include a character in my film, the way he looks, right? So, you know, the bald man, the t-shirt, the tractor in the background, the voice, I mean, all those elements comprise a composition on the screen, right? You're watching and you're listening to this character. And at the end of the day, I felt that my audience would really believe Jay McLaughlin, believe him, fall in love with him, maybe be angry with him, all the things you're saying, right? He's yelling at the judge too. So the choices, going back to, you know, my choices as an artist, that's an artistic choice. I mean, I know it sounds like it's more of a factual, you know, sit someone down in front of the camera and have them tell you something, but that is very much an artistic choice. Because at the end of the day, it's making sure that it's being expressed properly, that you're going to pay attention. You know, you're going to pay attention to the way he looks, the colors that he's wearing, his accent, what he's telling you, all that stuff. So you don't realize it, but that's what we do. You know, that is making those, and that's just one example. I mean, obviously, yeah. The film is scattered with, you know, imagery and snow falling and seasons. Let me just give you this final example. It's not overly obvious, but one of the biggest things to me being a New Englander is how important the seasons are. The spring, summer, winter, fall, and the changes that take place between. And the reason why that was so important to me is because I saw the pain that these people went through, and I saw the pain that when fall began to change to winter, you know, when the colors started dissipating and the gray skies started covering Rhode Island and the snow started to fall. These people, their brains and their hearts just completely switch. It switches back to 2003. Like, they feel it coming again. Do you know what I'm saying? Like yeah. Paula and Jay feel when February comes on. And so it just, in the same way, when the spring comes, it's almost like a relief, right? Like, you know, the first green grass or the first flower blossoms. It's almost like, I don't have to deal with that winter again, meaning I don't have to deal with these memories again. And I don't have to deal with the memories of, you know, Michael's birthday being 1 week before the fire when he got his tattoo. It's all this crazy stuff. So as a filmmaker, to make those choices, to make sure that the seasons are represented visually, or whatever, again, artistic choice, and, you know, to tell the story. So although documentary used to be a long time ago, very much more traditional, if you will, you know, in terms of the format and the structure. I mean, look at docs today, some of the best docs on Netflix and so forth. I mean, they're basically feature films. Like, who are you kidding? I mean, they're beautiful, multi-million dollar, you know, and they're done that way for a reason, is because the art has been injected into this format so much over the past 10 to 15 years that the documentary format has just completely changed. And the bar is set extremely high now.
Yeah. And thank you for your comments, David. I really appreciate it, and kind of like a little bit of a peep into, I have such a strong connection to this story, but it's been a little bit of a while, you know, to you know, with your film just being out, to kind of get back to it. And of course, killer show, the excellent breakdown of you know, of the station fire, really incredible expose, legal analysis, and otherwise. One of the things I wanted to ask you, David, of course, there's so much to the story, so much, you know, that wouldn't make its way into the guest list as far as telling the story the way that you did. Is there a part or a character, or not a character? Don't mean to refer to somebody as that, but you know, the person or somebody
subject.
or subject or something that you saw connected to this story that you kind of like wanted to convey, or you're like, man, there was a lot more to this, but it just didn't fit into what I was doing. Just about what you had seen in putting this together.
Yeah. 350 hours of content I have that had to be shaped into 88 minutes. So think about that. 350 hours.
Wow.
You know, we were choosing almost just over an hour of that. So if you look at the characters that, I mean, I'll give you two examples. Jack Russell, lead singer, incredible documentary character, the rise and fall of a rock star. He was in jail 55 times before he was 18 years old. His mother gave him his first Beatle album, you know, and he said after his first listening to the Beatles that I am going to be a rock star. And he sat in jail and wrote songs. And Jack Russell as a character alone would be an entire episode if I were to do the guest list as a series, as a 6-part, 4-part series. How someone who has a dream of being a rock star actually can rise to that level and play stadiums in the Forum and having tell these stories. I mean, Jack's story is an amazing story. And then ironically having him years later be the target of, I mean, in many sense, he's considered a murderer by people here in Rhode Island. And just that aspect alone, I mean, the controversy and just having Jack in this movie, I can't even tell you in Rhode Island how that played. So that's an example of, as you watch the guest list, the 88-minute version on television, on Reels, we obviously get into Jack. You know, you can, I think I balanced it enough so you understand Jack to some extent. But your question kind of alludes to, you know, how deep could you get? And it's a fascinating, fascinating story, which gives much more texture and much more backstory. And you would feel about Jack much differently, right? So that it's a really interesting topic that you get into here when you talk about control that documentary filmmakers have over the volume control. How I want you to feel about Jack Russell, I mean, that gets into a whole philosophical discussion about documentary filmmakers. What I didn't use, what I did use, how I used it, you know, how to be accurate, but yet how to be cinematic. So that's one part of your question is, you know, an example of a story that's so much richer and a character subject that's so much richer. Another topic that leads to what you just asked me is how many things are missing from the story. And I can tell you one story, a very short story here about another two young kids, who also, not the story of Jimmy and Mike, who you'll see in the guest list, who are the two college kids that got to interview Jack Russell that night, and unfortunately they were put on the guest list. One of them made it out, one of them didn't. But there was another story of two friends who used to bootleg shows. They used to go all around the country and just bootleg on their old, you know, Sony Walkman and record all the shows, you know. And one of the stories I had to leave out, and trust me, this was one of the most painful decisions I had to make in this documentary just for time, was to leave out that story. Because what many people don't know is that that show was bootlegged and the audio recording was found under the body of one of the kids who perished that night, and ATF recovered that. And many people don't know about that except if you read the book Killer Show. But it's not just the cameraman's video that you see on the news, but there was more to it. And the story of those two friends was something I unfortunately had to move on in this. So I guess if you really understand the guest list in terms of how deep the story should go, or could go, with these subjects and these characters, and also the stories that you didn't hear about, you can kind of get a sense how 88 minutes was a very difficult challenge to tell the story.
Yeah, I could, and it just thinking about in terms of artistic choices, I was looking at the film and taking up the issue of Jack Russell, for example, I thought you did a phenomenal job to, you know, I'm sure there are decisions around where you encounter people and saying, there's no friggin' way you can put that, you know, there's, don't put that person, don't even show that person, or, but there's so much unresolved, I think, within this story, and you talking about, mm-hmm. you know, that your exposition here is like an extended treatment of this where there hadn't been that, you know, there's a lot unresolved for people to encounter. So I think you present folks in a way to be like, how do you make a decision about Jack Russell, who wants to help, who screwed up or was near around incredibly tragic screw-ups or mistakes and is trying to help and people don't want his help, and you've done something or you've been involved in something and you try to make it right. And how the hell do you do that? It's unresolved. You know, can you help? Should you help? And I think it's important, even though those that lacks resolution, it's something to deal with, I guess. Right.
It's a really good point. And I specifically, especially with Jack, is I didn't want to leave the decision of how you were going to feel. Remember, we talked a little bit about the volume control level and setting it to a 1 out of 10. I mean, could I make Jack look like, you know, a very, I could make Jack look any way that, trust me. And it was a big challenge for me. It took many, many months in the editing room to make sure that it was balanced. Because at the end of the day, what I wanted you as a viewer to do is have all the information you need and the emotions you need and the backstory you need. And like I mentioned about Jack, it's so much more that you didn't see or whatever. But I think the choices that were made in the time frame that I have were sufficient to make you feel different. Because it's funny when people leave the film, how many people feel one way or the other about Jack. So I know I did my job, right? Because if everybody left the film thinking the same way about Jack, then I did not do my job. If everybody leaves feeling something different about Jack, that means they took and they interpreted the scenes and his feelings and his emotions and his dialogue and everything, and they interpret it their own way, right? So a longtime Great White fan who, you know, and or the parent of someone who died that night are going to feel very different about Jack Russell. So, but the point is that I took a lot of time in trying to, and that goes for all the subjects. I mean, when it comes to Joe Kinnon, who was the burn survivor, of course you fall in love with Joe and Carrie and Hadley and their family, and we tell the story of survival. And I mean, that's a little bit more biased in a sense where, you know, how can you not do anything except fall in love with Joe Kinnon? But in the case of Jack Russell, it's very subjective. And so I wanted to make sure it was very important to me, especially after all the hurdles that we went through. And you can imagine the film without Jack Russell, let's put it that way, because it was Jack Russell's guest list. And it just wouldn't be the same movie. So one of the challenges I had many people on Rhode Island not want to participate because Jack was in the film. And I had to stand my ground and say, look, you have to, you know, again, how can you tell these people that they can't feel the way they can? I get it. I understand it. I'm not, you know, against what they're symbolizing here. But I said, this can't be a story about Rhode Island. A lot of people aren't going to care. I hate to tell you, but it has to be a global story. It has to be the rock star, the rise, the fall. It has to be global themes of survival. It has to be, you know, you make a story about Rhode Island and it's going to sit on the shelf. If you make a big story that has a lot of things that anybody in the world can relate to, on themes and topics, then people will pay attention and they'll see that little world in Rhode Island. And it's basically a metaphor, right? So that's why I said, look, you know, and it's a very, if you think about this, what I'm going to say here, it's a choice between Jack Russell or somebody who's a station fire survivor. And you say to yourself, as a documentary filmmaker, how could you possibly make that choice? Well, that's the reason why, is because in the grand scheme of things at a global level, that was what was going to make the film more successful and watched by a bigger viewing audience, which is the whole point, so that more people in the world would see Joe Kinnon and understand if Jack was in the movie. And it sounds crazy, and it sounds completely, you know, in reverse of what you would think, but that's the philosophy I had to use. Not that I had to justify putting Jack in the film, it's my film, but I was trying to explain to people who are critics that this is why it's important to have that dimension and have those layers of things in your movie. Again, going back to the choices of art, you know, to make it a better film.
Yeah, and I wanted to thank you for making the series, The Guest List. I think in the questions that I ask about art and, you know, just about what it does for us in emotionally and in processing, for me, you know, me reading the book, The Killer Show, and seeing your excellent and considered documentary, The Guest List, for me, it helps me. It helps me move through those things, in having known somebody who perished in the fire, Mike Gonzalez, known as Dr. Metal, my best friend's cousin. It isn't as abstract as the show can be, as for some of the questions. And I have, you know, another question or two that is abstract, but as abstract as this question seems sometimes, it's for me experiencing the art, the documentary, the book is helped me now, many years later, just try to make sense of it and try to understand its meaning. So I just wanted to point out how important it is, and for a lot of folks, personally connected or not.
Well, two quick things just before I forget is Dr. Metal and Mike Gonzalez. Ironically, we went through we actually have a 4 or 5 minute segment put together, going back to my topic to you about how much we wanted to fit in and we couldn't. But we do have a segment on his story that wasn't able to be put into this version, with WHJY and the whole piece. So that was also, I don't want to say a regret, because saying regret, these choices had to be made for reasons of time, for the most part. But that was one topic. The other topic I just want to touch on quickly, when you mentioned the book Killer Show, one of the pieces that had to come together was John's book Killer Show. And just like Jack Russell, just like all these other pieces that the film would not have been made without, I had to convince John, because John originally is not a Jack Russell fan, as you can tell from the book. But John eventually really understood it, and John and I became very close, and we made a powerful duo, because he agreed to come on as co-producer, and he agreed to let me use the book as the foundation story based upon. So that's where my fact came from. So the credibility of the film increased significantly having the book as the foundation. So the way we kind of marketed this, in a sense, is that because we had a very short amount of time on the documentary, at least this version, hopefully it will go to a multi-part series, but this 88-minute version, if you take the doc and the book together and you think of it as a package, and just like you said, read the book, then watch the doc, those two elements of art combined, because the book can get into much deeper factual stuff, and obviously books do what books do, but you don't have that, you know, music and the emotion and the characters and the faces and all that stuff you do in the doc. So when you combine those two together, and you read it and you read the book and you watch the doc, it makes a very powerful statement that hopefully will affect people as a package.
Yeah. And the excellent, as I mentioned, John Baralek, the Killer Show, is generally available. I ordered it prior to watching your film, the series, David. And without the deliberate marketing that way, I viewed them very much as together, and just high quality, thorough work on very complicated issues. Hey, David, I got the big question here. It's one of those big, philosophical questions here at the end. I wanted to ask you as a creator, maker of art and things, why is there something rather than nothing?
when I see that or hear that question, the only thing I can think of is putting it in my terms of the same question I got from the rock stars and so forth. Why did you do this? Why would you do this? It's kind of the question, right? It's almost like, because if I didn't, there would have been nothing. So I guess to me, it's because I think you have something to say. And without something to say, you, in this world, you won't have that viewpoint. And so, again, going back to this specific example, I feel this is something because it's something that nobody has experienced before. Nobody would ever experience this story this way without creating what I created. And we wouldn't be having this conversation, and people who I've talked to who saw certain scenes and they started crying, that never would have happened in their life, right? So it's almost like if that never happened, then the subsequent things that trickle down from that would never happen either. So I don't know. I guess it's just a question that's very, obviously a very philosophical question, but that's what makes life. I mean, by creating new viewpoints and new experiences and new art, the biggest thrill I get is watching people react, and having it change their life. There's nothing more powerful than someone saying, "I just watched a movie and, I'll never forget it. I'll never forget the scene or something." And the fact that as an artist, you can change someone's life who just watches it because it affects them so much for whatever reason, because they can relate to it and they have a personal relate to it. And I guess I'll just punctuate it by saying Jim Gahan, who was the father of The Only Child, said to me, "Thank you so much for doing this, because now people will finally see the nightmare that we have to live with every single day as a parent when we wake up."
Wow.
Because this will never go away. So, something rather than nothing is, I guess I just helped the parent somehow, in some way, maybe cope with the rest of his life every day, because there's now a story that has a viewpoint that they can feel, hey, my son's story or my brother's story or my father's story, my mother's story is finally out there for the world to see, right? So they have something.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for that. Hey, David. Hey, everybody, we've been speaking with David Bellino, the director of The Guest List. He works in films, documentary, filmmaker, creator, and artist. David, can you tell the listeners, where to go to contact you or to contact what you make, to find The Guest List? Should they do? Where should they go?
Yeah, I would say one thing is theguestlistfilm.com. Theguestlistfilm.com is a website. It also has an email contact on there. And theguestlistfilm.com is a pretty extensive site that gets into the story and so forth. On that, we describe the broadcast partner that we have. So currently, there's a 88-minute documentary television version on the Reels channel. That's Reelz. So in terms of the airing and finding out more about the network and when it's on and so forth, if you go to reels.com, R-E-E-L-Z.com, you can search for the show, The Guest List, and they will you'll see when it will air again if they have it scheduled. It'll probably generally air another 4 to 6 times this year on television. The premiere was February 20th, and the reason for that was because that's the anniversary of the fire. We actually premiered the documentary on the night of the anniversary of the 19th anniversary of the fire. The way Reels works is since the premiere was on February 20th, that was about 2 months ago, the Reels channel waits until May 1st, which is actually yesterday, and the guest list should be available on the Reels app. So there is an app, again, if you search for R-E-E-L-Z, that you can watch an on-demand version. And then on August 1st, probably the most important thing, for those who don't have Reels or know what Reels is or don't have a cable subscription, because Reels is provided by certain carriers like Verizon, AT&T, so forth and so on. But if you're only a streaming person and all you do is Amazon and Roku and those kind of things, on August 1st, Reels is moving the documentary to their streaming platform. So that starting August 1st, you will be able to go to Amazon Prime, Roku, Pluto, and some of those other streaming platforms. And if you search under the Reels shows, you'll be able to find the guest list after August 1st on the streaming platforms.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. To hear the access the folks will have to this very important documentary. And David, I do want to thank you for your time coming on to the show. It's such a topic that you've invested so much into in trying to tell the story the best way possible for folks. It's a very impressive piece of work. I want to thank you for making it, and thank you for coming on to the show to talk kick around a little bit philosophy, but just really to talk about life and overcoming and perseverance and much respect and love to all the victims and also their families in the station fire. Thank you, David, for coming on the show and for for your bravery in your artfulness in telling this story and the stories that you tell. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much too for having me. I appreciate it. And again, I'll also pass along the same thank you to the participants, because just touching on what you said, the whole motivation reason behind being in the film for many of these people is because they wanted to help somebody in the future. And if a father could help another father down the road or so forth and so on, that's what gave them the motivation, is to teach people, let people learn, hope this never happens again. And I'm glad I was the one that was able to take that and put it in some type of artistic form and bring it to life.
Amen. Thank you so much, David. Great pleasure talking with you and learning from you. And best of luck in all you do. I really appreciate you.
Thank you, Ken. Appreciate it again. Thanks for having me.
All righty.
This is Something Rather Than Nothing.